Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, March 25th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest box office numbers from this past weekend, and we're also going to dive into the mailbag. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, let's get into it. Tell me how, let's kick things off with Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. How did that perform at the box office this past weekend?
Well, Ben, given that that was the weekend's big release, I think that's a logical place to start. So there had been a fair amount of conversation in the box office circles about this movie. You know, like reviews didn't come out till a little late. And, you know, there was some discussion as to like, how's this going to do? And, you know, top the charts came in kind of at the higher end of expectations with a $45.2 million opening. That was domestic. Overseas, it did $16.4 million, so you're looking at a $61.6 million global opening. That's decent. It did, however, have a $100 million budget, which is kind of the problem here. Ghostbusters Afterlife, which this is a sequel to, came out in November of 2021, so we got about a 2.5-year gap between sequels here. And Afterlife was made for a $75 million production budget, so that extra $25 million kind of, you know, it does make a relatively big difference when you're talking about, you know, that sort of opening. And especially if we look at Ghostbusters Afterlife open to $44 million. So it was almost an identical opening, especially if you look at the idea that 2021 movie going was still kind of recovering a little bit. So you would probably wager Afterlife might have made a little more money under slightly better circumstances. But yeah, we can use that as a bit of a jumping off point, but there is an interesting pattern emerging here with this franchise.
Yeah, I'd love to hear you elaborate on that. Jump away. Go ahead.
Sure. So, look, this franchise has an absolute ceiling. You had Ghostbusters in 84. It remains one of Sony's biggest hits ever, probably, which is why they've tried to make this a franchise for a long time. Ghostbusters 2 in 89, and then nothing for a very long time. There was Ghostbusters 2016, opened to $46 million. And then, as I just said, Ghostbusters Afterlife, $44 million opening. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, $45 million opening. Are you sensing a bit of a pattern here? You know, and then the other thing here is that all of these movies play much better domestically than they do overseas. For example, the 2016 movie made $128 million domestically, $100 million overseas. Ghostbusters Afterlife was much more weighted, where your split was a little more domestic heavy, with $129 million domestic, only $74 million overseas. So these movies don't play great overseas, and they really never have. So you can't rely on like China or other territories to bail you out. So there is, and worth noting, Ghostbusters 2016 finished with $229 million worldwide. Ghostbusters Afterlife, $203 worldwide. There is a pattern here. You know, and the reason Ghostbusters 2016 was a huge failure, perceivably from a financial standpoint, whereas Ghostbusters Afterlife was a success, is the budget. Ghostbusters 2016 cost $144 million to make. Ghostbusters Afterlife cost $75 million. When your budget is half the amount, your bar for success is lower. It's stuff we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
People get really upset about the way that 2016 movie is portrayed as a failure, but Sony overspent. It's that simple. And so that movie could have been a success if you had spent a lot less money on it. And we might be having a different conversation about this franchise right now, but that's not the way things shook out. So that's where it stands. It leaves Sony in an interesting situation if they want to continue things, you know.
Yeah, as you were talking about that, I had a faint memory of, I think, a piece of discourse from around the 2016 movie's release, saying that part of the reason that this movie and this franchise does not necessarily play as well overseas is because the idea that ghosts have different meanings to different cultures around the world, and it's not the same portrayal as you might find in America. So like, I had completely forgotten about that, but as you were talking about that and the idea that there's a ceiling to this franchise, I was just reminded of that conversation happening. I don't know if that must still hold, and that must still be part of the reason why that ceiling is still there. I would think that Sony would be much more aware of that than I am, though.
It's just that Sony wants this to be something more than it is. Around that 2016, there were lots of talk about, I think there was, if I'm not mistaken, there was a point where like Ryan Reynolds and Channing Tatum were going to make one. And, yep. So it's just not that. Like, it can be a franchise, but I think even at $100 million, I think basically Frozen Empire skirted disaster. Like, it made enough money where it probably... Because the thing with Ghostbusters, there's a lot of merchandising opportunity. You're going to sell more DVD box sets. You're going to... there's a lot of other money coming in than just the box office with this franchise. But even so, the movie can sort of become a loss leader in some weird way. I just don't... you can't really make these for $100 million. So, like, if they wanted to make a third one... It would be tricky because do you move on from the legacy cast? How much are they bringing in? How much are you going to have to pay Paul Rudd to come back? Like, and then it gets expensive again. And so it's like all these conversations about how do you do this? And, I honestly think it just might be, retire it or do it cheap.
Yeah. And it does seem like one of those franchises that could, it's not necessarily the stars that should be the driving force behind it. Like, the premise behind it, the basic, sort of fundamental idea of the whole thing is kind of like, in theory should be enough where you can, I think they were talking at one point, maybe it was around the same time as that whole Channing Tatum bit of like expanding worldwide and having like different movies about different Ghostbusters societies or groups in different countries and stuff like that. And like, just taking the 30,000 foot view of the whole thing, it does seem like the concept is more important than any individual people, especially as the original cast continues to just like age out. Right.
I would think so. And but also I do think Afterlife benefited from sort of being a more proper Ghostbusters 3. Like, it kind of did that Force Awakens thing. And I do think that movie would have made a fair amount more money in like 2022, let's say. Because I think 2021 thing, the box office was still really getting back on its feet. And don't get me wrong, the theaters needed that movie at that time. But I'm saying, like, hypothetically, that movie might have had a bigger ceiling. But I guess the point is that, like, these movies are what they are, and Sony can either accept that or continue to try to, like, because I still remember when that first Frozen Empire trailer came out, I'm like, wow, this looks a lot more expensive. And, like, that was my first, concern of, like, are you going to really do this again? And I don't know. So like luckily I was worried it was very expensive, like 100 still expensive, but I was worried it was more than that. And so I don't know. We'll see. I just think like there's been talk. I think there's like, isn't Netflix making like an animated series or something? Like, I think,
oh, are they?
Something like that. Gil Kanan, who directed Frozen Empire, I think he was talking about that. And like, I think like maybe an animated movie, maybe an animated series. Like, I think maybe animation might be a better medium for this going forward. I don't know. It kind of is what it is. And, Sony's in a weird position of like, do you accept that? Do you try to do this again? Do you make a more expensive movie and hope for the best? I don't know. We'll see. But
Okay, so from one empire to the other, how do you think Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is going to stack up when Godzilla X Kong The New Empire stomps into theaters this weekend?
So what's going to happen is Godzilla's going to take... I mean, it's obviously going to open number one. There's no question. So Ghostbusters, I think, is going to fall off a cliff next weekend. So it's going to look bad. So like, let's be prepared for that. However, once you get to April... it's pretty much like the bigger movies for the month are all like horror movies and stuff, like Abigail and Monkey Man is like an action sort of, you know, like there isn't a more family friendly option, and Kung Fu Panda's already been out for a few weeks. So I think Ghostbusters will, like, after that initial drop, might be able to find some space throughout April. Mm-hmm. And do okay. Now that's maybe the optimistic take. It could be that it just, you know, that loyal audience already showed up. Other things are going to come out and sort of get in the way. But I think that there's at least an opportunity here. But I also don't see this movie. My unsexy take is that it's going to make about the same amount of money as Afterlife made. Mm-hmm. And so Sony stands to make less money, if not lose a little money on the movie itself, but make money in the aggregate. Like, that's probably where it's going to stand, I would guess.
Man, I mean, just going back to what you said earlier about the merchandising and stuff, like, I remember when I was a kid, I had so much Ghostbusters stuff. I had, like, the, right. You know, all the toys and everything. I mean, I was, like, obsessed with that stuff growing up. And I wonder if those opportunities are still, well, certainly the opportunities to have that stuff are still there. But I wonder if, like, because culture has shifted so much and, like, you know, movies just aren't at the center of the culture the way that they were when I was a kid. So I wonder if, like, there is a whole new generation of children who are, you know, into Ghostbusters in the same way that I was when I was a kid. I mean, there's no way, after the original.
No, I agree with you. There's no way it's the same. I had a ton of Ghostbusters toys as a kid, and I don't even really like Ghostbusters that much. Like, I don't know how. I think about this all the time. Like, how did I end up with all those Ghostbusters toys? I must have seen the original movie more when I was a kid, but, like, in my adulthood, I've seen it once or twice. I'm really not a big Ghostbusters guy. I had a bit of, like, an awkward thing in Slack last week where Brad made a reference to something very popular of the Twinkie thing, and I didn't get it. and everyone was like, dude, this is like the Barbasol can in Jurassic Park. Like, it, you know, you should. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, it missed me. So, point being, even I had a bunch of those toys. But I think that moment is past. But you're looking at, like, these popcorn buckets. Again, you can make a new box set to sell Blu-rays, DVDs. People are renting these things on VOD right now. You're probably selling, like, upscale collectibles to older people, right? Like, I don't know if there's a Hot Toys figure, but maybe there is. Things like that. There's still going to be a fair amount of merchandising opportunity. It's just that merchandising opportunity has probably changed a bit. So that's where the money probably comes from. But yeah, there's no way it's like it is where there's an entire aisle at Toys R Us, which doesn't exist anyway, you know, for Ghostbusters toys. But yeah, so it you know, we'll see. I'm not in Sony's accounting department. They must be doing this for a reason, but we'll see.
Okay, so tell me how Dune Part 2 performed in what weekend is it now for that film?
Yeah, so Dune is actually in its fourth weekend.
Fourth, okay, yeah.
So Dune actually held on to the number two spot, even though it shed 410 screens, and it shed a lot of premium format screens that it had to give up to Ghostbusters. Not IMAX screens necessarily, but, like, your Cinemark XD, those type of things. Dune dropped just 38%, made $17.6 million domestic, which was great. It was very close with Kung Fu Panda 4. Kung Fu Panda 4 made another $16.8 million, but Dune is holding like gangbusters. It is now at just a few pennies shy of $575 million worldwide. That includes $233.3 million domestically. Yeah, I mean, it's looking like it's going to get closer to $700 million than $600 million, which, considering the first movie made $400 million in its original run, is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
News. So, I mean, yeah, it's great news. All but assured that Denny's going to get to make three if he wants to make three. It should be Dune Messiah. So probably won't be for a few years, but I would bet you anything that's going to happen. So, yeah, good news there.
Excellent. Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back. And we have one more box office story to talk about and then an email that I want to spring on you as well.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so tell me about Late Night with the Devil. That was another one that I saw a lot of conversation about. And then Immaculate as well, the Sydney Sweeney horror movie. How are these two horror films doing?
Yeah, so it's best to sort of talk about these as a pair right now because something interesting happened. So I apologize to the listeners right now. I'm going through the worst allergy bout I've ever had in my life, and I'm coughing a fair amount and trying not to let it interrupt the podcast. I apologize. So Immaculate, the Sydney Sweeney Immaculate Conception horror movie through Neon, opened at number 4, made $5.3 million. And Late Night with the Devil, the much buzzed about, not quite found footage movie, but sort of found footage movie starring David Dasmalchian, about a late night talk show gone wrong, made $2.8 million coming in at number 6. But now notable with that one, though, that was only on just over 1,000 screens. So its per screen average was actually better than Immaculate. But here's what's interesting here. For Neon, the distributor behind like Michael Mann's Ferrari and Parasite, which won Best Picture a few years ago, this is the biggest opening weekend ever for a Neon film.
Whoa.
And then also similarly, Late Night with the Devil posted the best opening weekend by a lot for IFC Films. So both of these horror movies, which are well-reviewed, you know, well-received, have posted the best opening weekend for their small to mid-level distributors, which is
like across genres or in specifically when it comes to horror.
No, like full on, like Neon has not had a bigger opening than Immaculate, and IFC has not had a bigger opening than Late Night with the Devil.
Wow. Yeah, that's really impressive.
Yeah. So now it says a lot about what these distributors, like the size of movie they're into, right? Like you and I have talked about, I've joked about IFC quite a bit on this podcast. Like, you know, sometimes I joke, like, I don't know where their money comes from, but truth be told, what it is, they use these theatrical releases even before COVID to sort of like essentially advertise the VOD release, right? Like it essentially works as like a form of advertising with a little bit of revenue attached to it. Neon, I'm not sure, because they'll tend to acquire stuff or acquire distribution rights. So like, you know, Michael Mann's Ferrari was like a $90 million movie, but they weren't on the hook for $90 million. They were on the hook for, you know, US distribution. So, but in any event, it is, you know, interesting that like, this is the level at which is a big opening for them. So it's the whole, it's all relative thing. Late Night with the Devil cost a few million dollars, was acquired last year at a South by Southwest. I think it still has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Very buzzy movie. You know, so this one probably stands to have long legs. And again, you talk about that post theatrical, like advertising for the VOD thing. This movie's probably going to make a ton of money and it's going to Shudder as well. So it'll probably result in some, you know, signups there. Immaculate, same thing. The VOD demand for this is probably going to be huge, but it's also probably going to do well in its theatrical run. So, you know, we've talked a lot about horror kind of being the anchor for the industry over the last couple of years, and here's an example of it, like, setting records for a couple of, you know, valuable distributors in the industry, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. I think if Immaculate is a Neon movie, I think they still have that output deal with Hulu. So that should be streaming on Hulu like in a few months or something. But there's definitely going to be a window before that where like a traditional VOD window before that.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. And like I said, like Late Night with the Devil, I think it's I don't know for sure. Please don't quote me on this, but I think it's next month it'll go to Shudder.
Okay.
And IFC has a good relationship with Shudder, and a lot of their movies go there. But this seems like one people are seeking out. Like I anecdotally can tell you, friends don't ask me about movies. They don't care. I've had like several friends be like, yo, have you seen this Late Night with the Devil movie? Because again, like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes is a good headline, right? So, you know, people are curious and people seek out horror. So these are movies people are seeking out. Good wins
there. For sure. Okay, I want to spring this email on you. Phil from Germany wrote in a couple of weeks ago in response to a conversation that you and I were having about physical media, Ryan.
He mentioned Guten Tag, Phil.
He mentioned something in his email that I wanted to highlight here. So it was like a multi-tiered email, but I'm just going to focus on one part. He says, the podcast keeps mentioning physical media and its recent bigger relevance than expected. Keep in mind that both DVDs and Blu-rays decay over time. Many of my untouched or barely touched DVDs from 20 years ago do not play completely anymore. My Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is still sealed, and Veronica Mars has only been played once before. These collections only played half of the episodes when I revisited these TV shows last year, and those were not the only ones. Blu-rays decay slower than DVDs, so going for those and creating backups seems to be the best way to keep the favorites available. So that's just not really been part of the conversation that we've been having about the importance of physical media, Ryan. And I wanted to ask you if you've ever experienced any of that I think it's called like Blu-ray rot or DVD rot, yes, or like the decay and stuff like that. Because I've never experienced that with anything. I guess I've just been lucky. But have you ever run into that?
I've not experienced that personally, but it is a thing. I guess my understanding is that there are ways to store them that might help with that or whatever. But, you know, I mean, eventually everything erodes, right? Like nothing is permanent, but there are at least, I think the idea with physical media as a means of preservation is that like something exists, right? Like someone will have a copy somewhere where that thing can be preserved. Like, and your odds are better that if you have that physical media on your shelf, that its lifetime will last you longer and you'll have a better chance of being able to watch that rather than like relying on someone else to keep something on a streaming service for you. I think that's the argument, right? And yeah, like, but yeah, there is, DVD rot is a thing. And yeah, Blu-rays are better. I'm not sure how 4K discs factor into that. But yeah, so like if you have 20-year-old DVDs sitting around, they might not play great. And so, you know, that's an argument for Blu-ray for sure. But yeah, it is part of it. And I mean, obviously these physical media distributors, like they're not going to sit there and advertise that, right? Like that's right, not something that's going to be talked about. It's also, my understanding, it's a relatively small issue, you know, compared to the, you know, if you have an entire collection and how long you've had that collection, like it's not a huge issue.
Yeah, I was trying to do a little bit of research before we started. I didn't have much time, so I apologize to Phil for not being able to do like a full deep dive on this before we started talking about it. But from what I saw in my sort of cursory Googling was that like sometimes the batches of discs at certain manufacturing plants and stuff like that will be bad. And like it'll be easier to identify, okay, this one came from, you know, this disc came from this bad batch kind of deal. And it's not necessarily like every single movie that was manufactured in 1996 is going to, you know, rot at the certain, at the same rate or whatever. So, anyway, I just wanted to mention that because it is an important part of this conversation that I've just like have breezed over because I've never personally experienced it. And I kind of forget that it happens to people.
Oh, it's certainly worth bringing up. But it's like, it's better. I think your odds of that being an issue are like less than like, you know, VHS tape literally degrading or like, you know, there are things, it is still probably, and also some of these distributors like Arrow and Shout Factory and some of these other places, there's more awareness of it now. So I believe that their quality control, like, you know, if there's like a bad batch of discs or something, that's something they might flag before sending these things out. And, yeah, you know, a guy, even when I ordered my gigantic Friday the 13th set from Scream Factory, like there was a tiny little issue with one of the discs after they sent them out and they sent everybody replacements, like without even asking, you know, and things like that. So some of these places that are doing this are, in my experience, doing everything they can to try to make sure that the quality is there and meant to last. But yeah, it is something to be aware of for sure.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I think ultimately we just come down, like you said, Ryan, of like, at least it's something. And like the idea of being able to go into your closet and pull it out or whatever is more attractive than like the fact that then relying on companies, which clearly don't have the end user experience as the most important priority, to keep the rights in the same place at the same time. And like, you know, just there's so many instances of, you know, we've written articles over the past 5 or 6 years at Slash Film about people who have quote unquote purchased, you know, digital copies of things and it just being yanked from their library, like even though they thought that they owned it and that kind of stuff. So that's, I think that is the foundation on which we're having this conversation, where the physical thing, at least you can go into your room and pull it out and like, hopefully it will last for as long as possible. But yeah, it does seem like decay is inevitable for Blu-ray, DVD, 4K, whatever, like over a long enough timeline. Yes, this stuff is going to go away, but just doing what we can to try to keep the things we love for sure. As long as
possible. And like, you know, nothing is perfect, right? Like I have, you know, I've been buying CDs since I was a young teenager, like, and I still have my entire collection of, you know, thousands of CDs. And I, you know, the bigger issue I run into is, oh shit, I scratched it, you know, not like the degradation, you know, the disc degrades or whatever. So like, you know, as someone who's been doing this a long time, if you take care of your collection, it will probably take care of you. But yeah, you know, nothing is perfect, I guess, is what I land on there.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks to Phil for that email, and thank you all for listening. You can find much more about everything we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I will link to a few things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.